Hello, everybody. This is the Gingerbread Man. I'd like to welcome you to my home again. We're here today to talk about some real interesting stuff, and I'd like to start out a lot of these self-episodes by explicitly putting out what my purpose and what my claim is and what I'm trying to do here. So I'm doing these things for free. I'm not asking for money ever. I have no intentions to ever do that. Or even sign up for those accounts. You know, this is an effort to express myself and to be able to reach other people, hopefully, you know, starting with people that who I know personally, which I know many of the people who are listening, especially at this point, are probably people who are close to me or who at least know who I am. So that's cool. And I just want you to know, thank you. You know, it means a lot to me that you're following this and that you are listening to this right now and listening to my raspy monologues that lead towards destinations that are murky at best. But we're going to get there together. You know, and I want to inspire people to want to go talk to other people. You know, like, conversation is so important. Back in ancient Greece, there was a man named Zeno, and he is coined with starting a class of philosophy called Stoicism. Maybe some of you are familiar with what Stoicism is, and that's great. I encourage heavily to look more into it. Zeno does all these. He basically held public conversations. They had this place that was called the Stoa Poloika. I might be pronouncing it wrong. Please let me know. But people would gather in the Stoa and they would just have conversations, you know, philosophical conversations about life and meaning and anything, math, you know. When I think about stepping into that place, it just sounds absolutely just, if I could go back anywhere in time, it would be to these locations, and I'd want somebody to implant a brain chip that allowed me to speak Greek without having to learn it because it's too fucking hard. But just so many people just talking about stuff. And we have this incredible tool at our disposal now. We have the internet. And we have access to speak with strangers at a rate that is just unprecedented. You can go and talk to people in another country, like, easier than a pen pal. And I find that so fucking cool. Like, that's so neat. Like, the fact that I can go talk to somebody in China and there's a translator that we could use that's built into the software that allows us to have our conversation. Like, that's fucking cool. You know, like, that amazes me more than space missions, personally, at least at a useful level. So I want to make people feel more comfortable to go form their own Stoas. I want to get my gingerbread ideas, well, maybe not my ideas, I just want the curiosity just to go and find what is important and what is curious to you. What are you interested in? And it doesn't have to be Stoas, it doesn't have to be philosophy, it doesn't have to be any of my religious interests or any of that. Just go find something to be interested in and then go talk to somebody. And then form your own Stoa, make your own conversations happen. You'd be surprised how contagious it is for anything that can be started in a simple conversation with two people. You get people talking, that's how revolution started. Not to revolutionize, but, you know, we could worry about fixing the food problem or fixing climate or fixing whatever, or we could worry about fixing ourselves, you know. And we can even learn about ourselves in conversation. You can learn a lot just by talking to people. And you'd be surprised by the things that come out of your mouth that you might change because of the conversation. And afterwards, maybe you might look at it and completely change your mind. Conversation is fantastic. Go have one right now. Or if it's nighttime, when it's a better time to go have conversations. I don't know. So I went on a trip this weekend with my son. We went up to northern Colorado to go see his family, which is real cool. When he was little, like I moved up there like shortly after he was born to be close to him, because I don't live in northern Colorado. I live more south central-ish Colorado. And as a father, I knew immediately that I had to start my court stuff. So like within a week of him being born, I was already at those courthouses hitting documents and trying to get cases started. It was really fucking important that it got rolling, because I knew how little power I was going to have if I didn't protect myself. And it's so important for men and women alike to go and help support other parents out there who can't see their kids, because that's fucked up. You know, and I lived months not seeing my boy, even because I was waiting for court shit. You know, it's slow, you know, so I started immediately. You know, within a week of him being born, I was in that courthouse doing shit. And, you know, so just being up there was rough. You know, me and his mother were together for a little bit, but then we split, like, really quickly. You know, and, like, when I moved up there, that is, like, there was a little bit of time, probably about 4 or 5 months, about how old he was when I actually moved up there. And, you know, we were together for a little bit. I was living in a little house with her and her mom. It was like this really, you know, I try not to be judgmental, but it, like, I swear it had like a broken window on it. Like, it was just hard. And we split pretty quick right after. And, you know, that place became, so I moved a city over. It's like close enough to spit on it where I could be by my son, but I didn't want to live in that same city. And I formed a life up there, and then I got my boy, and then we moved back here because I needed help for my family, and that's just how she rolls, you know. So it's been, and I've tried to take him up there to visit his family, because I've formed a very good relationship with all involved on her side, you know. They're all just fantastic people. I have a lot of respect for them, you know, and I don't have any intentions to ever put a barrier between my son and half of his family, ever, you know. And so it's been a while since I've been able to make that trip. It takes about 2 hours, hour and a half, 2 hours if you're lucky. And I hate driving, you know, but I just got a new car, so it's okay. And I was kind of looking forward to testing her out and seeing how she'd do on a longer ride, you know, how I do, you know. It's manual. It worked out pretty good. We made it one piece. I didn't have any concerns, you know. I wish I knew I'd like podcasts back when I used to drive up to northern Colorado like twice a week, because I used to make that drive twice a week, 2 hours up, 2 hours back. It's 8 hours on the road. I put 50,000 miles on my car in like 6-7 months, less, about a year or less, and it's just nuts. I would have really enjoyed having these shows, you know, a lot of the people that I listen to, you know. So been a while since I made it up there. So a while ago after my surgery, I was on a kick and I decided I wanted to take care of business. And so, one of the things I really wanted to do was get my son to go and see his family. So I contacted his grandma, made plans, tried to make some decent plans so I wouldn't be miserable. So I wanted to see some of my friends I hadn't seen in a couple of years. That was really important. You know who you are. I had a great interview with a really good friend of mine, Corey. I'm sure it's the episode right before this one. I assume it's probably how I dropped it, I think. But yeah, it's really cool. He's got a little sister. He hadn't seen his sister in several years, and just seeing them together and how much they look alike, and his mom ended up showing up and actually seeing him, and he hadn't seen his mother in years. And that's pretty potent. And you know, none of her family wanted to do it, so I had to supervise, which is an awkward position to put me in, but I'm graceful. You know, I've always been good in those positions. You put me in a sticky situation with a bad authority figure, I'll please. Or, in this situation, I'm the bad authority figure, but I don't know. It's just, yeah, I'm so good seeing him with her. And any parent out there who's hesitant, maybe you want to supervise, be there, make sure everything's safe, but just always remember how important all involved are, even extended family, you know, if you're split from your significant other, if they get a boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever, stepdad, stepmom on the other side, that is okay. You know, like, it's just more love. And when you see your kids separate for a while, it hurts. But this weekend was a great thing. And it was so good to see that and to see him get to have fun and soak it up. And I can make that happen. We can do these things for our kids, you know, and we might hesitate and bicker and agonize about doing it, but it's important, you know? So, yeah, enough about that. Hope you enjoyed the Corey interview. I had a lot of fun. It was so good. I was nervous. You know, we hadn't seen each other in 14 years, and I got over the house. We started chatting up immediately. I seen him first time years, and about 5 minutes later, I was like, "Hey, can I go grab my microphone?" So that's where that interview starts. And he's a cool motherfucker for being able to do that, because that's pretty awkward. But we fell right back into friendship, to be able to talk, and that's an intoxicating feeling, you know. Like, if you ever have an opportunity to go reconnect with a good old friend, do it. Drive. I saw a good friend of mine a couple years back when I was living in Northern Colorado. He drove out on a motorcycle, saw me from Florida, and I was just fucking nuts, you know. Like, if you don't have attachments, you can go up and drop and go see somebody. Do it. Like, I wish I could. I'd do it. Start doing it soon when I make time, carve time out for those kind of things. Do some road trips. Why fucking not? Well, that's a lot of just introductory bullshit. Let's get into the meat. I like to start out with this analogy I heard recently, and I'll try to pick it apart. It's called tracks in the snow, is what I'm calling it. And I think I heard a couple different renditions of it. Initially I heard it on a science podcast. I believe it was Crowd Science. Crowd Science is an excellent podcast run by the BBC, I believe. They're really fun. They have hosts that they call in, and they like call in questions, and then they get to like talk through it, and they get like, yeah, it's just a lot of fun. And they talk to specialists. I love the sound effects. It really pulls you in, makes you feel like you're involved. Cheap, cheesy soundboards. That's something I want to get into. You know, eventually the show is going to be very different. Right now it's just bare bones, and I'm going out and I'm just spitting, you know. I have very raw notes. I've been thinking about what I was going to talk about for maybe 10 minutes. So that's how we do. But in the future, maybe I'll have some more professional shit. Maybe I'll have some segments. Maybe I'll get correspondence. I want to get an outdoor mic. Just go fucking run up on strangers. What do you think about truth? Sir? Who the fuck are you? And why are you sticking a microphone in my face? Is that the truth of the matter, sir? And then I run. But, you know, it's just that'd be, I want to get, I got plans. I want to do, it's going to be all over the place. I'm going to do my own fucking, we're going to have a good time. So I digress. Tracks in the snow. So on this science-y podcast, they were trying to explain. She was trying to make an analogy for how, this is how I picked it up. Maybe it's not word for word what she said, but this is what the feelings I got from it, was how our brain habituates and how we form pathways. Like, you think like every event and every activity has to be mirrored. If we're basing physical consciousness off of raw physical hardware, which I have another analogy that's the exact opposite of that that's coming up soon. But, you know, we got to be able to extend both sides in order to figure out where the golden mean is. And so, like, if there's physical processes, that means when we do something brand new that we've never done before, we're building new neural pathways. And that's why it's so difficult to do it. Like, when I learned manual, it felt so awkward and I was so scared because I felt so out of control and it was almost dangerous, you know. Whereas when you've been driving an automatic vehicle for 10 years, you can text and drive with your knee and you don't give a fuck. Or there's women who put on makeup while they're driving. It's just insane. Maybe people in manual cars can do that too, but I can't imagine driving a manual car while trying to apply makeup, you know? Like, so when you do something new like that, you form this new neural pathway. And then over time, every time you go over it, you reinforce it with these myelin sheaths. You know, myelin's a fatty deposit that gets encoded over the outside of the tails of these neurons. And then the more fatty deposits, you can speed up the signal, and that's faster. And the more responsive you are, the better that your brain works. You know, I think there's more to it than that. But, you know, to an extent, that's part of it, especially our reactions and our feelings and this mind. You know, I understand. It makes sense to me, and I like it, and I have an affinity for this physical scientific approach, even if parts of me are kicking and screaming for idealism. But, so, imagine just this huge field of, like, white, perfect snow, untouched, gorgeous, slightly foggy, you can't see the clouds, or it's slightly foggy, you're in a cloud, you can't see the sky at all, you know, but it's like you can see this big ass, just perfect white field, and it's just gorgeous, you know, and you go and you walk across the field, and you turn around, and you see your footsteps, right? That's walking a new path. Now imagine that this field is like fucking 4 feet of snow, right? Like it's up to your chest. Maybe it's taller than you if you're a small person. Like that's hard to initially trek through that, like without snowshoes. Maybe you're in jeans and you're just like trucking across this field, right? And you get across and it's just been hard work. And you look back and there's like this like fucking canyon walls. So you're like even short snow path footprints, you know, like if another person comes along and it's an uncut field and somebody's already walked or and that other person is you and you're trying to get across the field, are you going to walk across the fresh, hard to walk snow because it's 4 feet of snow? Are you going to trek or are you going to go through the footprints of me, the person right before you? Right? That's the question. And like, even as a big body moving through, and like, of course, this is, we're thinking about tiny processes and chemicals and what are the motivations of a brain cell. But I would probably take the path of least resistance. And I would hazard to say that even if you are damn stubborn, you are probably in a very similar boat to me, and that's something that you would do. So path of least resistance, I'm walking along the way. So now let's take that analogy and let's gut it. And like, let's look at the different ways that we could be forming habits and we could be performing activities and doing different things. Now imagine this new field is a bad fucking habit. The first time you trek across it, you get pissed off and angry. And so from then on, every time you encounter that scenario, your brain guts to that original path, that angry path, and remembers all that tension. And it goes, oh shit, this is a bad fucking moment. And instead of rationally thinking about it, your brain is going to take the path of least resistance. And even if you handled that situation badly, it generally is going to try, if you don't think about it, to go through that cut path, even if it was a bad path to cut in the beginning anyways. So let's think. I'm just been really fucking vague here. You know, like what's a bad activity? You know, something bad that you could do. Like, I'm cutting a blank here. Like, say the first time you ever used a bathroom, you forgot to wash your hands. So every time after that, you never washed your hands. You know, like, I kind of like think of toothbrushing. I keep going to sanitary things for some fucking reason. Maybe in your youth, you never learned how to be decent to people out in public. So as an adult, you still run that path. You know, like, it could be a hard path to cut something different and to approach a situation differently. You know, I wish I could think of an example. Maybe one will come to me later. Like, but so the trick is to want to cut a new path, even though it's difficult. Yeah, you might want to take the path of least resistance just because it's easy. And every time you've ever attacked the situation this way, even though it's been harmful to you, and even though, like, I wish I could think of an example. It's like, I'm not exactly struggling. Like, I get angry with my kid. Like, so, all right, that's a good one. Okay. So, as soon as your kid starts back-talking you, as soon as you start to hear the but, you can hear in the tone, you know, like when they start to talk, you can hear the tone come out where it's like, you can hear like your inner boy just groans or inner girl just groans, goes, ugh, this child's going to fucking back-talk me again. And so, early on, when they start talking, maybe at first you're really gleeful, but you get annoyed easily. And so you cut this path of annoyance where every time your kid backtalks you, you're always just snap immediately. Whereas a harder path to cut would be to suck it up, swallow it, and go, oh, yeah? Maybe talk them through it. They're back-talking you, even they're rude as fuck. Oh, I can see how you think it that way. But maybe this is a better way to handle that situation. I know you don't want to pick up your toys because it's really difficult. But maybe if we pick up your toys, we can get some candy soon. Or I can help you. You know, like that's the harder path to cut. Because the instant response the brain guts to is that easy, hardwired path that's been walked 1,000 times. And it looks like a fucking big trail in this hard field. And he goes, oh, let's just go snap again. You know, and like I'm working on this all the time. I wouldn't say I snap excessively. I do, you know, but I'm working on it, you know. And I'm definitely better than I used to be. And that's what you want to be. That's the pocket you want to be in, you know. Ha! This is not a parenting podcast. But I bring it there a lot because it's relevant to my situation. All right. Next, let's think about service and discipline. What is service and what is discipline? I like to think about defining words first. And I'm not sure if I agree that there's one definition for any words. Words are fickle vehicles and they're paint. And sometimes you can mix colors and sometimes you can make up your own shit. Maybe even give words new meanings that people haven't used for them before. You can get creative. Don't forget that. Service. I've been trying to pull myself in work. You know, I work by myself in a kitchen. I have coworkers. I depend 100% on myself. You know, that is who gets the job done. And I can get help sometimes, but crucially, you know, 99.9% of it is me that I depend on. And that's cool. You know, but for a while I got really, really high stressed out about it because you can, you know, get behind in the weeds, maybe have a couple bad days, and then, you know, you're fucked. You fuck up a truck, you know, you don't get the truck all the way out. You don't get all the stuff you need, and, you know, you don't have anybody to point the finger at but yourself when you work alone. And that's great. Makes me very happy in a lot of ways. Happiest job I've ever had, honestly. Empowering. I like working by myself. But, you know, so what I've been trying to do is take time out anytime I can to help somebody, you know. You know, I didn't have a lot of time the other day, and one of the teachers needed help holding a baby. And, you know, I like to call him Chunk. He's just a big old little dude. And he's very unhappy when he's on the ground. And we need to fix that. And I guess the main trick you do when you have a baby who wants to be held all the time is you do hold them, but you put them down a lot so they get really acclimated up, down, up, down, up, down. And over time, they get used to it, even if it's rough for a while. You know, they have that instinctual path that they've cut because they've been held too often, not judging, you know, or maybe just the baby's temperament. Maybe that's what the baby wants. Maybe the parents didn't even have any effect. Who fucking knows? Not my place to say. But, you know, so like, I just might go help this little dude. You know, I've been trying to take time, at least 5 to 10 minutes every day. I know that sounds little, but you do little things for multiple people. And you make a stance to help somebody. Especially if you're working with somebody, you go out of your way to help another station, another place when you have a second or you make a second, you know? Like, a lot of the times, I'll try to, when the teachers have to go get supplies or use the restroom, you know, I'll go stand in the door for them. You know, I can't stand in a room alone because whatever. Maybe I shouldn't even be saying that. But when another teacher is there, I could be a body so they can go grab something real quick, which takes like 30 seconds. You know, like, it's just a little bit of assistance for people. And I could just get frustrated and be like, fuck, I need to go do my own thing. I've been frustrated before when teachers have asked for help. Or I'm sure everybody's been in that situation where somebody's asked for help and you're working on something hard and you just fucking sigh because you're like, oh, I'm 30 minutes behind. This is going to make me 35 minutes behind. And I get it, man. But instantly just dropping what you're doing when somebody asks for help. Get into that mode. Try it. It's hard at first. It's the difficult path. It is the difficult path in the tracks in the snow that you're trying to make, you know, in this field. You know, that's the difficult path, is to drop yourself and all your things that you need to do and immediately go, okay, let me help you. Maybe you're out in public, help a stranger when they need it, you know, immediately.
just be on, have that cue. At least that's what I'm trying to do, is I'm trying to build that cue in me. When I see somebody in help that I need to do, or I need to help somebody, I want to be able to do it immediately with no second guessing, no judgment call. You know, I want to be in that, just that reflex. I want it to be reflex. That's where I want it. That's the pocket I want to be in. You know, discipline. This one's been hitting me hard a lot lately. You know, like, discipline's always been a hard one for me. I'm going to get into this more and I'm going to do some readings from the Bhagavad. But with discipline, the Bhagavad says that there's three mind states that people get into, and they're basically all traps, and your job is to transcend them all. But you can hover in and out of these mind states. I'm just going to fucking read it right now. Okay. This is chapter 14 of the Bhagavad Gita as it is, which is a translation by the founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, which is AC Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada. I'm using this completely for educational purposes. I don't make any money. I'm not trying to coin anybody. I'm doing very small verses. I'm trying to start conversation, free thought, speech, whatever. I'm not using this any beyond just like an educational purpose. So please don't bone me. All right. The translation that Swami put out is for chapter 14, text 5. Material nature consists of the three modes: goodness, passion, and ignorance. When the living entity comes in contact with nature, he becomes conditioned by these modes. So those three modes are kind of the basic ways that we can live as humans. And I definitely related. And through chemical, the middle mode is passion between goodness and ignorance. And text 7, the Swami goes, "The mode of passion is born of unlimited desires and longings, O son of Kunti. And because of this, one is bound to material, fruitive activities." So fruitive activities is the results, you know, doing things for results, doing things for money, you know. And that's, so Swami goes into it where passion could be somebody who is, this is weird because he also says that ignorance is people who use drugs and get into chemicals. But like, I guess I did dumb down with certain things like alcohol. Alcohol is a dumb drug. You know, I don't get stimulated, or I used to try to read on booze. And I'd read for like 10, 15 minutes, read 5 pages, and I'd go to watch TV because I'm just tired. You know, most of my, like, I'm trying to calm my brain with what I do generally, but it's more like marijuana. Like, I smoke marijuana primarily to stimulate. It brings color to my world and makes me passionate. I've never gotten too stoned to the point that I couldn't talk. In fact, for most of these things, and when I'm with people, I'm better speaking. I'm slower. I'm less all over the place when I have that opportunity to be able to focus. So I align it closer to passion. I'm trying to feel passionately, not ignorance. And I think that comes to a difference in culture. You know, when you have these huge religious sects like this Krishna Institute, where all self-indulgence is not criminal, but it's, you know, the idea is to drop everything, transcend material existence. Maybe I'm just not quite at that point yet. You know, I'm trying to break away from attachments to negative paths of habits, maybe? No, I don't know. So Swami might just be thinking on it differently. So I key into this passion. So with discipline, that's where it made me start thinking about it initially, was that there was a time period where I was drinking way too much, and I was being very stupid in my youth, not close to now, quite a while ago, so don't worry about me. But so discipline has always fascinated me, because that's what made me feel sick with myself when I was in those pits of despair, pits of ignorance. Maybe Swami and me are right. Maybe it's a mixture of passion and ignorance. But It always fascinated me because I wanted control over my life, and I felt controlless when you're in that space. And if you're sitting in that space right now, I'm really sorry, and I hope that you can crawl your way out. You can do it. You can always pull yourself out of that space, and you can make something a lot brighter and a lot more worthwhile. But so let's boil down discipline hard style. Let's go back to Swami's discipline, which is that lack of self-indulgence, lack of sense satisfaction. You know, what the key to getting out of material is to not satisfy. You know, I might want to sleep in longer, but I'm going to get up right now. I might want to eat some shit food, but I'm not going to eat shit food. You know, I might want to stay up till 2 o'clock in the morning, but I'm going to go to bed right now, even though I don't want to. You know, that's denying what your senses are telling you, because your senses are telling you, I want this because it's going to make me feel good. Maybe feeling good isn't the best thing for you right now. You know? So the dictionary defines the word asceticism as severe self-discipline, avoidance of all forms of indulgence, typically for religious reasons. So severe, yep, right on the money. Asceticism, I would consider that if it was like a philosophy as like a style of living, asceticism is severe. The Buddha didn't eat for 40 days, and that's ascetic. You know, starving yourself for spiritual reasons is ascetic, you know. And like, I'm working on fasting. I think fasting is interesting. I've only done it a couple times, but I want to get more into it. I was fascinated by the control that comes with it. It's very uncomfortable, but you know, sense denial, and you're not going to die from a day's worth of food gone. You can go keto, your body goes ketogenic. Your body's going to take care of you. You can go up to a week or more without food. So it's not like you're going to die as long as you don't fall into a bad mental space and become anorexic. That's one of the things I was worried about, is I could see how somebody trying to fast like spiritually or trying to do it for mental, educational, exploratory reasons, if they like that control feeling, I could see how somebody can be addicted to it, and I could sympathize with how the anorexic gets their confidence and that strong feeling from not eating, even though everybody around them is like, dude, this hurts me to see you like this. If you're in that spot, I'm sorry if it's triggering. You know, you have to learn how to eat. Fasting's okay. You know, you can find control in your life in many other ways than, you know, putting yourself on the brink of death. That's scary. So why would somebody pursue discipline? Simple. Control. We can't physically control other people or make other people do what we want. I can't morally make anybody do what I want and feel good about myself. The only thing I can do is control my own life. And you can too. Every single person has the capacity to control their own life. And we do that through discipline, through practice, and through forming many different things throughout the day that we discipline ourselves with. I wake up at 4:30 every morning, and the first thing I did for months is I'd wake up and I'd immediately sit on the floor and I'd meditate for 30 minutes, which is hard for me for a while, especially holding yourself awake at that time in the dark. It can be kind of tough, but it's a good silent moment. And usually I just got up and I'd start burning, and then I'd hold that stance until I burn myself out. And so now I start my day slow, but that takes discipline to do it every day. Wake up every day. I'm going to do this. I'm going to sit on the ground. I'm going to do this 30 minutes. 30 minutes can, like, that adds up over time, months and months of 30 minutes. I have hours of morning time spent in that space. I'm proud of it, but it takes discipline. You know, I eat breakfast every morning. That takes discipline. You know, I get my son ready and get him doing stuff. Discipline. These are routines that you build. You know, I get to work reasonably on time. Discipline. I do a good job. I got all my habits down. It's discipline. I'm trying to discipline myself to get into better attitudes at work. You know, and recently I've been running in the mornings, and that takes discipline. Sometimes you wake up in the morning, you don't want to go run. I run at 4:30 and it's fucking dark, you know, like, but it feels good to insert little bits of discipline. I take cold showers. You know, I talked about that on my last podcast. I might go into it more in another one, but I'm not going to dig into it this one. It sucks, but go do a bunch of cold showers. You can do it. You'd be surprised. It's not going to kill you. Just don't let it touch your face. No cold water on the face, just on the back. You know, I've been trying to add many of these sort of small disciplinary rituals into my life. And, you know, I commune with the cap and stem often, and that's uncomfortable for me a lot of the times. Sometimes I'm on top, a lot of times you're not. You don't know how the dice are going to roll, and it's always good in the end, even if it's a tough one, even if it's a tough time. You know, the cap is going to, it comes through with information, even if you don't process it, even if in the moment you're like, I just want to get through this, I'm fucking done. White knuckle it, please let me go to sleep. Only 2-3 hours till it's over. You know, but in the morning you think on it, you might find, oh, what kind of stuff was disturbing me? You write, you know, you might be surprised what lessons that the cap was trying to give you, even in those difficult moments. You know, but that takes discipline. A lot of the times I'm scared shitless. I can feel it. Like not like I'm sensing the future, but it's like you can feel the waves and you know it's coming. Like this is going to be a big one. You know? Butterflies. So discipline is something I'd like you to think about more over the next few days. Think about the things that you discipline yourself with, not like punishment, like just activities and habits that you instill for your health that might be difficult or counterintuitive. Do you even think about it? Have you considered your aversions to certain activities? An aversion is the opposite of a desire. And it's when, like, the opposite pull that pulls you to something, that pulls you away from it. You know, like, have you thought about the things that you're averse to? Or do you just live your life programmed and react to them when they happen and be like, oh, this shitty thing happened to me today? But have you thought about beforehand, like, if this shitty thing happens to me, how am I going to handle it? You know, if you think about it beforehand, you can figure it out. And it's a lot easier for you to do it if you're mindful about it. So, let's do another analogy, because I like these. I've been liking to call this the radio car consciousness analogy. And I got a little doodle here I wish you could see. It's pretty cool. Lots of stick figures and lines. I had to keep it straight in my head, because I was getting confused. So, you have a RC car driver, you know, you're standing on a big cliff, you're looking down. It's another fucking field, but there's no snow this time. It's green grass. Awesome. You have a gasoline-powered RC vehicle that's badass. It's fast as shit. It's got racing stripes on it, and it literally has a plume of smoke. It hauls ass. You drive this thing around, and you're just having the time of your fucking life, all right? So that's the image here, right? The car, the remote car, gasoline-powered, racing stripes, you got it. Going around. That is analogous for your body. You know, it's all of our physical processes. It's the brain. It's all those weird things that people are observing and studying. You know, what does it mean? I don't know. But the body is controlled by the dude in the RC. And kind of like consider the dude with the remote control. He's like one unit. It's not like, in this analogy, there's no separation between the controller, you know, and the human. You know, the human is using the controller, and that's the influence that we're looking at here. So that's the mind, that's the pull, the ego that adds desires and aversions into you and makes you crave things or want things or not want things. That's the mind, and it's the snippy thing that's always talking. You know, when we're meditating, we're trying to not exactly shut it up, because if you try to abuse your mind, it'll fight back harder. But you're trying to work with it and find the spaces in between thoughts, because those thoughts are the mind, and that's the controller controlling the RC car. So, what separates the RC from the RC car? Radio waves in that EM field, right? So in this consciousness analogy that I don't remember where I got it from, the EM field, that's where consciousness is. The radio waves that are influencing the controller in the body, that is where consciousness presides in the analogy. Which consciousness could also be replaced as synonymous with what I like to call intellect, because I would consider intellect separate from the mind. My mind wants one thing, and when I institute discipline, when I try to find a new path in that hard field of snow, you know, my intellect is what comes in with the whip and goes,
I know it sucks, but we're not doing that right now. You're going to be smart about this because it's smarter and you're going to feel better tomorrow for it. That's the intellect. And that, I feel like, exists in that EM field between the mind and the RC car. You know, the body and the mind, the RC car and the RC controller. And in the Bhagavad, they call it the super soul. So Krishna is basically the supreme... He was a real person that people talk to. So it's kind of like Jesus. Like it's a weird figure where a lot of atheists would look at Krishna as just a man. Like Jesus was just a man. But if you're a Hindu, Krishna is part of these iterations of the supreme Godhead coming to like Ram, Krishna, you know, Vishnu creates the whole world. But these are all segments of the one Godhead. You know, it's like this God is incredibly schizophrenic, basically. And so we have what's called an Atman, which is the soul. And the soul resides in our heart, I think. And we have an individual soul that keeps its individuality. So even if we transcend, according to the Hindus, when we get to that heavenly planet and meet Krishna or the Godhead or go back to Godhead or whichever variant that you're going with, you know, we have that individual Atman, but within the Atman, there's the Para Atman, which is the super soul, which is the piece of Krishna. And in the Bhagavad, it's like, I think they use the analogy of, that was a good one. When you have your thought, you can feel your thought, but you can't feel other people's thoughts. It's like Krishna's Para Atman, the Godhead residing in all living creatures and all essences of life. It's like the whole universe is a body, and we might not be able to sense other individual cells or people, but that Para-Atman has the ability to sense its all entirety, and that would be Krishna. And so Krishna is that creative force, that causation, that... So Vishnu puts out material, and then I think the word is impregnates. Krishna impregnates the material world with that creative life force, that essence, that Atman. And so from the fusion of the spiritual and the material, you get the Atman. And then he impregnates it with the super soul, the Para-Atman, which is what, I don't know, it's fucking weird. I'm trying really hard. I might be wrong. If you want to email me at Brandon with an O, W-Vogt, V-O-G-T, at gmail.com. I'd love to take your fucking complaints, or if you have any ideas or you want me to talk about something different on a different episode, yeah, anything. You know, you want to talk? We can talk about flowers. I don't give a shit. So... let's do some more Bhagavad, because I've been on it today. It's been really helping me a lot. We're going to go back a chapter to chapter number 13. Text 6 through 7, Swami says, and this is speaking about nature, and... Let's go back. Text 4. Now please hear me my brief description of this field of activity and how it is constituted, what its changes are, whence it is produced, who that knower of the field of activities is, and what his influences are. So there's two items in this piece. There's the field of activities, and there's the knower of the field. So to use the last analogy, the field of activity is the car in the mind. The knower of the field is the consciousness. So preface. Now on to text 6 through 7. The five great elements, which this would be the field. This is describing the field of activity. The five great elements, false ego, intelligence, the unmanifested, the 10 senses, the mind, the five sense objects, desire, hatred, happiness, distress, the aggregate, the life symptoms and convictions, all these are considered in summary to be the field of activities and its interactions. So everything, which is like beautiful for me, because that's what I've been trying to say is like, my sense of self is divorced from fucking everything. Like, I feel like there's some odd shit that I witness happen inside my own physiology. And sometimes I'm doubting my RC car, okay? Like, and so the second one he goes out is the false ego. So false ego is attachment to the material body, according to Swami. So if you accept that this body is all it is, that's the false ego. Whereas the real ego... would be accepting real desires like service, like desiring service. Imagine your ego, instead of desiring a cigarette every 2 hours, desiring to go help somebody or hold a baby.
You know, I mean, they're both desires. It's both ego. But which like, I know which ones I'm balancing out, you know? Like, I like that. I thought it was highly apt. So let's move along. No. Intelligence. So that's, maybe that's even the intellect that I'm describing. Maybe that would even be divorced and they're transcendent. Well, because they're going back to collective self, and maybe I'm still too attached to my sense of self to be a true Hindu. I'm not a Hindu. I'm just looking at it. So the unmanifested is that subconscious, the things that you're making, the 10 senses, which should be sight, smell, sound. 10 senses, fuck. How are there 10 senses? There are 5 great elements. Eyes, ears, toes. One who desires the 24 elements. It doesn't even go into it. What are the 10 senses? I can only think of 5, maybe 6. All right. Texts 8 through 12. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, and self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, non-attachment to children, wife, home, and the rest. Yeah, fuck your family. And even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. I like that. Constant and unalloyed devotion to me, resorting to solitary places, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I thus declare to be knowledge, and what is contrary to this is ignorance. Okay, I know that was a long one. I'm going to try to pick it apart a little bit. So, the perception of evil birth, you know, dropping that, I'm going to die one day. You know, it's easier to live if you accept it. And that's hard. Maybe a lot of people I'm speaking to right now are still very afraid of death. Hell, I wouldn't be a hypochondriac if I wasn't trying to save my body for as long as possible. But when it comes to the actual moment of death, that's, I'm not sure. I'm more curious. Not that I'm rushing it. I'm not gonna, like, I don't think anybody should rush it. But when it happens, I'm curious as to what happens. I'm not sure what's going to happen. Maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's something. It's kind of cool. Non-attachment to children, wife, home, and the rest. What the hell? So yeah, a lot of these monks throughout China, Japan, a lot of these Asian countries, and other monks in other places, it's very common for spiritual people to just fuck off. And why? Isn't that the ultimate service, is to love your family? But I guess that's worshiping the body again, because it's your body's body, because you just made another body. But isn't it still the para-atman? I don't get the selfish. It seems selfish to me. But I guess that's just my bias. Even-mindedness amid pleasant and unpleasant events. So when you get fucked, being okay with it. And when something really good happens to you, not being overly fucking riotous and celebratory. You know, these are things to be wary of. When I'm getting real happy, I kind of always take a couple breaths. I'm like, ooh boy, it's the middle of the day, bro. You're going to burn yourself out if you don't take a breath. Sit down for a second. It's cool. It's a good moment. I'm glad you're happy. You know, that's level. Whereas you can just be like, I get manic and I'll start burning. I'll burn out real quick. I don't know. It's good stuff. Bhagavad is very complex. It's very deep. It's religious canon. You know, it's part of the Hindu Bible. It's part of the Hindu Vedantic texts. I like this shit, you know, and I would love somebody to get an opinion and talk to me about it, but I feel like it's one of those things that's definitely going to be a niche hobby unless you're trying to be a Hindu. Like, because if you're not dedicated to this, this is definitely a thick web of ideas, and a lot of it's beautiful, and I think a lot of it's highly applicable, but you know, I could see how, especially from a Western mindset, you know, if you're like a practicing Christian, you try to pick this up, I could see how it would feel atrocious to you. Whereas I could probably hold the Bible in this and read them at the same time. So, end it off before my little thing real quick. Text 17. Although the super soul appears to be divided, he is never divided. He is situated as one
although he is the maintainer of every living entity, to be understood that he devours and develops all. So, this really cool story earlier in the Bhagavad, a couple chapters back, where Arjuna, which is this kid who's on a chariot with Krishna, and Krishna and Arjuna doesn't want to fight this battle. There's people on both sides, and you know, and Arjuna's just like, I got grandpa on that side, uncles on that side. I don't want to fight because I'm gonna end up killing one of my family members. And so that's kind of like the point of Krishna wanting to speak all these things to Arjuna in the first place and explain this cosmic theology. And you know, one of the images that he shows him is he goes into his cosmic form, which is just like basically he shows him the universe, and like, which scares the shit out of Arjuna, obviously. There's a scene in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. It's like the second book where the dude with the hand that comes out of his fist, he gets put into this prison. It's a mind prison. And the punishment, I can't remember his name, but I know he was just ridiculous in the movie. But the punishment in the mind prison was that he had to be shown the universe, and that like 99.99999 before him, everybody who was shown the universe just went completely mad because it's so big you can't even comprehend how much shit's going on. So if you witness everything, it blows your little brain and you die. And it's like, that's like an execution style in this sci-fi book, which pretty fucking cool. So Arjuna is shown the cosmic form of Krishna, which Krishna is Bhagavan, and Bhagavan and everything, or Brahman. Brahman, Bhagavan, I get them confused. So, his cosmic form is a universe, and Arjuna just terrifies, like, dude, stop. And part of this, like, it sounds psychedelic to me, but like part of this vision that he's shown to by Krishna is Krishna devouring everybody. And like in the text, Arjuna can like calls out, like he's like this one grandfather was being mashed in the teeth, and that the purport is that he was being tortured because of his being on the opposite side of Arjuna. Like Arjuna was on the good side, and this was just more reason for Arjuna to go fight, because even if he kills a family member, Krishna eats everybody. We all die anyways. The attachment to the physical body in the war is what Krishna is trying to say. Hey, it doesn't matter if you kill your family. They're all going to come back to me. You're going to come back to me if you do the right service. And I know it's a real fucked up analogy because we don't have wars. We don't have to go kill our family members anymore. But, you know, if we take time to walk that hard path, that hard, hard path in the snow without our snowshoes, you know, if we devote our service to somebody and give compassion and love to a stranger, you know, I know that's the exact opposite of killing your family, but that's how I'm going to take this analogy, because that's how I bench it. You know, we're all going to die anyways. What matters is what we do right now, and if we serve others, and if we love others, and if we care. And, yeah. I want you to know that I care about you, even if I don't know who you are, even if I don't know your name, even if I've never seen your face. You know, I'm very grateful that you have made it to this point, and that you are breathing, and that you are working or not working, you have family or not family, whatever position you're in, I care about you. And I hope that you can find the position you want to be in, and hopefully the position you are in right now is the one you want to be in, because that's the pocket. Thank you so much. I'm just so grateful. Have a great night.